Of the program hosts and their guests and are not necessarily those of WSTU, St. Mary's Episcopal Church, and Temple Beit Haim. Products that may be mentioned are not necessarily intended as an endorsement. Any reproduction or retransmission of this broadcast is strictly prohibited. And now, WSTU presents a priest and a rabbi. Call in with questions and comments at 220-9788, 220-WSTU. Now, here's your host.
Happy New Year! Happy New Year to everyone. This is Father Christian coming to you from St. Mary's Episcopal Church. Well, I'm actually coming to you from the studio of WSTU 1450. But it's not just me in here, because as you heard from the show title, it's a priest and a rabbi. Which makes... It's sort of like the title. We were just laughing at this seconds before we went on air, me and Rabbi Durbin, that it's just like this flair that's added to the to the show.
No, it just seems like when they go a priest, which gives all the respect and everything else, and then it's the add-on and a rabbi, as if there's.
Do you get it? Absolutely. They walk into a studio and guess what happens? Yeah. So. Anyhow, you just heard Rabbi Durbin, and my name is Father Christian, and if this is your first time listening to the show, welcome, welcome, welcome. It is a show that has a priest and a rabbi looking at the world through a theological lens, but really breaking it down to our authentic selves and just the basic humanity of what it means to be part of like a religious figure, creating more conversation between about religion, about our faith. And also just looking at everything, sometimes pop culture, but getting to know certain things about what does it really mean to be a priest and a rabbi in the 21st century, in America. So we want to start off the show today. We want to talk a little bit about New Year's, but then today our focus is going to be what are some of the main similarities between Judaism and Christianity? Because there are a lot. There are a lot. And even if you want to throw in at one time Islam, because we're all three Abrahamic religions. But for right here, right now, there are plenty of similarities here. As we all know that Jesus was born a Jew, circumcised a Jew, and died a Jew. And he didn't come in and say, I'm starting Christianity, right? So we're going to talk about that today. We have a couple of things, mainly focusing on the life cycle events that happen in both of our religions, the similarities that are there, and how tightly we are connected. And as Christians, when we do not reflect upon our intimate connection with our Judaic brothers and sisters and the tradition and the scripture, we're missing 2/3 of the boat. So,
and I think it's also about, you know, as you and I had discussed a little bit earlier, you know, what unites us. I think in a world that is so divisive today and is very challenging to not look at those challenges that divide us, what makes us different, what makes us separate in some way, but you know, looking at some of those life cycle events that bring us together, why the show exists, why we exist, why we're here to kind of promote the message of, you know, unity and interfaith dialogue and conversation.
Yeah, when we went over to the temple, and a lot of people from St. Mary's went over there, and for. Unfortunately, it was the memorial for the events in Pittsburgh. But just taking in the liturgy, and many people reflected on just the similarities, or that's where we probably got that part of our liturgy from, and that's where we probably got that part of our liturgy from. And a lot of it all goes back to the temple. So before we jump into that, though, we just wanted to dabble a little bit with the New Year's. And did you get away, my friend?
Did I get away? I did not. My sister and brother-in-law and my two nieces from Santa Barbara, California, were here over the last week. So we had the very fortunate opportunity to spend a lot of time with them, which was wonderful, especially around the New Year's time. You know, really just taking that sacred moment of family. I haven't seen my sister-in-law in a while. They don't really get much of a chance to come out here.
And are they, I'm assuming they were all safe from the fires?
Yes.
Okay, good. Yeah. Good. Yeah, Anastasia and I, so we were my boss, you know, gave me about 4 or 5 days, my earthly boss gave me about 4 or 5 days after Christmas. Cause as you know, Christmas, we had like 72 services. So we were pretty wiped out. And so we were sitting there and my mother was in town for a while. As we all know, she was on the radio show a couple times with us. And then after she left, we're like, okay, we're going to go for New Year's Eve. And we're looking around at all the prices and the price is just ridiculous. I mean, it's just crazy. Hotels that we usually go to get away with are like 2-3 times the amount now. And we're almost at the point and we're sitting there on the 30th, just looking at all the different discount places. And we're about to give up. We're like, this is just not worth it. Worth it to spend this like almost $600, $700, $800, you know, to get away. We're looking at Airbnbs, but all the good ones are all taken. So some dude's shack and he's like, $50, man, you can get it. And you might have hot water. And we're like, no, and, you know, walked 8 blocks to the beach. So we're on a Hotel Tonight. Mm. And this is like an unintentional plug. They do not sponsor us here.
They should.
They should. We could contact them. But we are cycling through Hotel Tonight, you know, on the app. And like by the every 10 minutes, sometimes there's a new price that pops up. Some hotel somewhere will throw out something and say, we got to get rid of a couple rooms, and they discount it dramatically. Mm-hmm. And so the moment we were about to give up, all of a sudden Anastasia starts like jumping up and down and screaming. I'm like, what? She's like, Oh my gosh. This 5-star hotel just dropped like by 2/3, dropped by 2/3. I was like, what? I was like, get it. She's like, don't you want to read the reviews? And I was like, don't worry about that. Just get it. This is it. We got to do it. And so fortunately we were able to do that. The cheap prices are a little,
skewed
because you get that resort fee. Mm-hmm. Then you get the parking fee, mm-hmm. you know, cause we went to Fort Lauderdale. So that's like $39 a night for the parking and then another $40 a night for the resort fee. So it's
almost the price of the room.
Yeah, exactly. But it was great. We got away, got to Fort Lauderdale, right on the water and the beach. And it was very soothing and relaxing. Mm. And most importantly, quality time for Anastasia and I just to be together. Mm. So, so resolutions. Did you and your family sit around and make some resolutions and –
So yeah, you know, as Jews, we my wife and I certainly made our New Year's resolutions, although we made it 4 months earlier, because of course our New Year's happened to be Rosh Hashanah,
right?
Rosh being the head, Hashanah of the year, so the head of the new year. So we made our resolutions in September, but I think it's always an interesting time around December 31st, January 1. You know, we sit there and you know, kind of think to myself, you know, what do I want to accomplish this new year? So I made a vow, which I brought forward around Rosh Hashanah. And I talked about the fact that this year I'm actually going to join a gym, and not just any gym, not just the ability to actually seemingly work out. In the past, my wife is a very big gym enthusiast, goes, you know, 4 or 5 days a week. She does the yoga. She does all this great stuff. The gym for me, I cannot stand it. I find it excruciatingly painful. The thought of even getting into a car and going to the gym is fraught with anxiety, and I just don't like it. It's not me. But I made a vow. And in the past, what has happened is I've gone to the gym. My wife will work out when she's not looking. I'll catch some Z's on the machine. When she does look over, I'll pretend to try and work out. And it's just not for me. So this year I said, you know what? Enough. I'm actually going to join a gym. And it's not just the model of I'll join a gym and maybe I'll go and 6 months goes by and, you know, they just keep rebilling me and I never go to the gym. So this year I joined a gym and I said to myself, I'm going to try as best I can to go twice a week. So I got myself a personal trainer because I know that without a personal trainer, there is no way I will push myself.
You got skin in the game now. You're paying.
I am paying somebody to make me sore. So
make you ripped.
It's actually funny.
The rabbi is going to be shredded.
My trainer, as we go through a lot of the exercises and a lot of the high intensity training program with him. He had written on a one of those mirrored areas in the gym, and he wrote "Ripped Rabbi." I kind of thought it'd only be up there for a day or two, and you know, it's been about a month. So if you ever are, won't express my gym, they change names, but you know, it is there. But this year I said to myself, you know what, I really want to try and push myself and really have it become a real realization. So I said, you know what, I'll for 4 months, 5 months, about 6 months, I've been going to the gym, and I said, you know what, this new year I'm going to try as best I can to try and hit it 3 days a week. So I try and do Mondays, Wednesdays, and Saturday morning, just before I lead services for the congregation. So trying to right now, my New Year's resolution is a little. I'm going to try and hit the gym 3 days a week. I want to be a little bit.
Wait, you said try before you said you made a vow.
Oh no, I made a vow to go to the gym.
Uh huh.
My resolution is I'm going to try to do 3 days a week.
Okay, so yeah, that this sounds like a failure already. Yeah, you need a vow 3 days. Vow for 3 days. Yeah. I don't know if you feel comfortable going for that vow, but what I want to ask is everyone who's listening from Temple Beit Hayam, everyone who's listening, that you all should look into coming together and buying shirts for everyone that say, I follow the Ripped Rabbi.
Yeah.
Or Temple Beit Hayam, home of the Ripped Rabbi.
Yeah.
And you guys can sell that. It could go towards your youth ministry or however you want to use it.
As long as we're not saying home of the Restful Rabbi.
Yeah. 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 The one who catches Z's while he's on the treadmill.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes.
It's more on the elliptical.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, Anastasia and I ended up on the beach and on the 31st, and we're just sitting there as the sun was going down. We had this really nice romantic time. Mm. I was like, babe, you want to talk about our resolutions? And it just became this like long list of things we're going to do for like each other. And it was, romantic, talking about our life and our future and how we want to approach that and certain things like a journal that we're going to have every day that we're going to write something in it for each other every day. So the first day, she already wrote a whole page. Wow. I was like, oh man.
Yeah, you're in trouble.
Yeah. Right. So I was like, I better write a page too. Right. But I don't know how that's going to be sustainable for 365. But yeah, so certain things like that for our relationship, just because, as you know, in the ministry, the quality time, sometimes, you know, you give so much of your energy towards this ministry, so much of your time towards the administration, so much of your time towards preaching, so much of your time towards social services, so much of your time towards social justice. And then you got this 5% left that you bring home sometimes, which is completely unfair to the family. And then you just give them as much as you can of that 5%. And so this is being so intentional about saying, nope, there's some boundaries here where if we don't set these boundaries early enough, this is not going to be good for the marriage. So I think that's our resolutions were more around that. But to note, just like for Rosh Hashanah, the Christian's New Year was Advent 1, which was 4 weeks ago. So this is, but I think probably most Christians do a lot of resolutions on December 31st, January 1st. But really, Advent 1, 4 weeks before Christmas, is our New Year. That's the new liturgical year.
It's so interesting, especially Jewishly. You know, we get to the non-Jewish New Year, December 31st, January 1. You know, it has some degree of meaning, I would think, at least, you know, for me. But, you know, we undergo the same process, you know, 4 or 5 months ago. You know, we have just before Rosh Hashanah what we call the month of Elul, which is a 30-day period to which we really introspectively look at ourselves, right? We get to Rosh Hashanah, terribly serious time, a time of, you know, real reflection, leading up to that moment of Yom Kippur, which we say and we understand as Jews that this is the time at which, you know, the gates of repentance are always open. And I think that, you know, when I think about New Year's resolutions, or I think about, you know, the vows that I make for myself, or that, you know, we set for our family, that time, usually around September, really becomes the real resolutional moment for us. You know, I really loved what you had said moments before of, you know, sitting there with your wife and, you know, for Anastasia and yourself to actually write down, you know, moments or things that you would like to change or things that would be impactful for both of you. You know, my wife and I do relatively the same thing, not so much New Year's resolutions, but to look back over the last year and to say, look, I'm really sorry if I have taken you for granted.
Oh, wow.
I'm really sorry if I may have been raised my voice passionately a little too much over the course of the year. You know, and I think it really is a time to really sit down and really soul search of saying, what do I want to change? And I don't expect rapid change. I don't expect, you know, miracles to happen. But I think it's to push myself to say, when those moments do arise, how will I react? And if I can react in a way that is less than I had done the year before, from a spiritual perspective, God has heard my prayer. You know, if I do the same behavior year after year after year, it almost is like God saying to me, come on, your words are meaningless.
Right.
You haven't put really anything to action. And I think around this time, it really is, it's an interesting time.
Well, because, yes, I mean, I went to the gym on January 2nd, and it was just packed. I mean, you couldn't get it as packed. So, within 4 weeks, we'll be okay.
So it's funny. My trainer had said the same thing, where obviously there's an uptick of those who joined the gym January 1. They hit it hard for 4 weeks, and then their membership just gets rebuilt, and, you know, maybe they go to the gym, maybe they don't. And it is actually a really curious time of why now? Because it happens to be January 1 and it's a new year. We're in 2019. I'm going to make myself and empower myself to be a better person. But then why? What is it about the human psyche that says, well, after 4 weeks, well, I tried it.
Well, we're creatures of comfort.
Sure.
And so to break that comfortable streak is very challenging for us. And that's where having a trainer, having a coach, or having someone who just has to lay into you, or a friend who keeps you accountable, is so important, right? And I think the liturgical year of the church, and probably the liturgical year for Judaism, it helps keep us accountable. Because when we get to, and we're going to get to this right after break about our similarities, you get to Lent. Our season of Lent that's right before Easter. I mean, you have these 40 days where there is a focus, and hopefully within your own church, you set this focus and you set these exercises. And sometimes there's exercises you do as a community, spiritual exercises that are saying, where do I want to be at by the time I get to Easter? And hopefully in Advent is, where do I want to be by the time we get to Christmas? Because if we just show up and do, we are creatures of comfort, just do our same thing and show up every Sunday and just expect that is going to allow us to be spiritually prepared to be able to fully understand the birth of Jesus Christ or the rebirth of Jesus Christ into our hearts. We're kidding ourselves. We're just Sunday shoppers. Seasons, our liturgical seasons, I think this is the beauty of the liturgical calendar, is that you have these seasons that say, okay, here is the focus. And there's this focus of introspection. There is this, and maybe you want to take on an exercise, and every day you're going to do this. Every day you're going to write a letter to someone and let them know how grateful you are for them in your lives. Or for Lent, it gets into more introspection, and that you are taking the time to look and to reflect. And there's all this curriculum you can get, or there's programs that happen within the church that allow you to not just kind of slough it off, but
I also think that the beauty of, whether it be Rosh Hashanah, where it's the head of the new year, or it's the Christian New Year. I mean, there's something there that says, what is really the essence of the spiritual condition or the human condition? And I think part of it is autonomy. I think part of it is the ability to say, I have control over my actions and my life. Right? To be able to say, this year, I'm going to take back control in some way. No, and it may not be the you know, complete changing or reversal of how we view or see the world, but being able to take it in manageable increments that say, I'm going to try to empower myself. I'm going to try to better myself in whatever capacity that may be. It's just an interesting phenomenon that it only seems to occur within those important milestone event times. And then, you know, Time elapses.
But I think that's why we're religion in the 21st century has begun to, in some ways, at least some of the churches and maybe temples, I can't speak for that, but are struggling because people do want transformation. People want transformation in their lives. And there's a reason why yoga studios are opening up all over the place and 12-step, you know, is filled because people know I go there, I have something that I want to change in my life and I want to go there and I want to be transformed. And the church or the religious institution should hopefully be that place that could promise the same thing. But sometimes we just get caught up in just kind of going through the motions when really it should be about transformation of our spirit, heart, and mind and in being empowered, being healed, being forgiven. Those are big things to do. Mm-hmm. And the church it needs to get back to those roots. I mean, Jesus was changing people's lives. And hopefully, I hope in my prayer is that at St. Mary's, people feel like that is happening, that my life is being transformed because of my relationship with Jesus Christ, right? Mm-hmm. And the relationship with this spiritual community, this religious community. But if the leaders of the church and we're not providing the venue or the landscape for people's hearts to be touched, lives to be changed, then I can just go see a life coach, and I'll pay $200 a session because this life coach, my friend told me, totally changed your life because kept them accountable, gave them a system, and said, you know, you came to this life coach and said, I'm lazy, I'm lackadaisical, I want to improve my business, I want to improve my mindset, I want to improve my self-esteem, I'll go to a therapist, I'll spend $200 an hour for that because I want that change. And so if we really believe in the power of God's transformative ability in our hearts, and then the religious institution, the church, has to really get back to the basics of offering the ability for people to have the relationship with God, that if we truly believe this, changes makes us a greater, I don't know if greater people, but just more in tune with God, that harmonizes our heart, that adds healing, that transforms our mind and our soul to be more at peace, to find more joy, which is different than happiness, but more joy in our lives, more love in our lives, more compassion.
It also puts the onus, I believe, in our membership, is to say, look, if the church is not providing, if the synagogue is not providing for your needs, use your voice. Express and tell those in those positions what you would like to see. Empower others to say, you have a voice, don't hide behind it, voice it. If there's something we're doing well, let us know. If there are things that we are falling behind on or we could improve on, you know, that would be spiritually fulfilling or would give you greater joy or greater sense of spirituality, you know, voice those opinions. Let us know if there's something you would like to see, you know, let us know. I mean, you know, from a synagogue perspective, I certainly take those comments very seriously to be able to say, look, if there's one person or a few that are asking for a certain improved program, we can't move forward and enhance that program unless we hear from our membership.
Right.
And I think that really is the time is, you know, ultimately it does boil down to, you know, as Jews, we say, use your collective Jewish voices, use your individual Jewish voices to be able to express so we can move, we can adapt with the times, and that we're able to provide for you a connection and a community that you're proud of, that's something that you feel fulfilled in some way.
But maybe a lot of times the introverts are not going to do that. Maybe the extroverts will. And so one of my mentors, Carol Anderson, she was one of the first ordained women in the Episcopal Church legally. And, you know, she would take these sort of 15, she would visit 15 parishioners randomly twice a year and sit down with them and hear them and talk to them and know what's going on in their lives and what are the issues and what's really pulling on them, on their hearts. And then she would notice these common themes that would happen. And that is what formed the programmatic vision of the church for the next 3-4 months, being like, okay, a lot of people here are talking about grief. We need us to start focusing on grief here. Hmm. Or, you know, there's a lot of people worried about money. So obviously there's, you know, financial peace, Dave Ramsey's class. You know, maybe we need to incorporate that or preach about that or talk about that. So it's a matter of, I think, also the leader is going to the people. So, all right, this is a very good beginning of the show. We're going to take a quick break. And when we do, when we come back, we will be talking about getting to these, some basic similarities. I mean, there's a ton of them. We're going to focus on like four or five that deal with more life cycle events that are very similar between Judaism and Christianity. And if you have any questions about some of the similarities, or if you question some of our similarities, think like, actually, those are more different, please give us a call. We love callers. We adore them. So please call us at 772-220-9788. That's 772-220-9788. We'll be right back in just a sec. I love that 70s music just bringing us in, right? The rock and show of the priest and a rabbi. And the rabbi.
Well, maybe the station can give us the sound bite so you and I can, as we walk around town, just kind of have this blaring in downtown Stewart.
We come up with a song for a priest and a rabbi. We are the ripped rabbis and the tall priest. All right, we won't get into any kind of rap show and put you all to sleep. We are back here for the second segment of this show, A Priest and a Rabbi, and we're here at 1450. And for all of you streaming who went online, it is thank you for streaming. And please feel free, if you have questions that are coming up now as we talk about the similarities or any questions that you have about similarities between Judaism and Christianity, please give us a call, 772-220-9788. So, all right. So there's obviously many different directions we can go with this, from theology to actual practices, through liturgical practices, through life cycle stuff. One of them that we wanted to go with was just going right back to the basics of baptism. So we have baptism in Christianity. And we also have the mikvah. So before we dip into that, we already got a caller, and Senor Francis is here. So Francis, it's good to have you on the show. We were just about to jump into the similarities between the baptism and also the mikvah. But before we get into that, my brother, welcome to the show, and what are your thoughts?
Well, thank you very much. I just love you guys, and I love the comments. But one of the things is just trusting in God and realizing our spirituality and the concept of ultimate reality, which controls everything. And for us to try and control anything rather than just accepting things as they are and realizing in some wonderful divine way, everything is in perfect order. And the relaxation, less doing and just more being, and appreciating and just being grateful for all the gifts that are just given gratuitously by reality, ultimate reality. So arguing with my concept of God encompasses the ultimate reality, which God is. And arguing with the way things are in reality, and I just know I'm not my body, I'm the spiritual expression of God's love. That's my essence.
And what I'm hearing from you, Francis, is that this universal approach to God's love and this ultimate reality, it just goes throughout all religions. And so every religion is sort of moving us in that direction of just being this universal, part of this universal divine life force.
Yes, that's absolutely true. And if you just listen to God, shut up and do nothing and just be open and receptive to God's grace, and be patient, and eventually it'll give you more joy than you can ever materially get or physically get. And I also don't work out because it doesn't make me happy, and I only do things that make me happy.
Well, all right. That's good. Well, you know, Francis, I believe I've seen you, you know, I've seen you before, man, and you look like you're in decent shape too. So, you know, you got a system there that's working. So you must
that's
be eating
the
healthy.
Of God. I have MS and has had it for 50 years. And 30 years ago, I was diagnosed chronic progressive. So I said to the neurologist, what does that mean? He said that you'll probably be in a wheelchair in 3 or 4 years. And I said, well, thank you. I'm going to go out and enjoy the next 3 or 4 years. And I enjoyed it so much and let go of all stress that I'm still ambulatory here now at 73.
God bless you, brother.
God has blessed me. And God will bless us all if we just allow it.
Yeah, I like that idea, brother. Just allowing God, and that's in some religions we call that submission, which that word can sometimes freak
surrender,
people out.
Surrender, yeah, surrender to God. Yeah.
So it's to surrender completely and being a human being as opposed to a human doing.
Yes, yes. Well, not even being a human, being a spiritual expression of God's love and the way God expresses God's essence through me on earth. And the earth is just an experience, and like Earth School, which has got nothing to do with totality of reality of forever. And a good thought too, by the way, I got some really wonderful compliments from people about not wishing them a happy new year. Somebody wishes me a happy new year and I return with, well, a happy forever back to you.
Beautiful. That's beautiful.
Isn't
that's
it?
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Bless you guys and I love you.
All right. We love you too, Francis. Thanks for calling in.
Okay.
Yeah, so you know that runs through. You know, I think all religions are trying to usually are focusing on that idea of just the submission, the surrendering, the letting go. Why contemplative prayer, meditation, all chanting, all these different practices that you see throughout major religions, whether it's Hinduism, Islam, Judaism, Christianity.
But I think it's also the recognition, right? It's as Francis said, it's about allowing the opportunity for God to speak in us and through us in a myriad of different ways. But at the same time, we're in a relationship, right? So if I allow God in and allow God the opportunity to speak through me, that I too am also speaking through God, that, you know, it is that sacred covenantal relationship that we go through, which,
sure,
you know, at the end of the day is, you know, given to us, bequeathed to us by God during those important and milestone events that we have throughout the course of our lives. And especially with the, you know, from the beginning, you know,
yeah,
to talk the first one of, you know, life cycle events of the joy of birth and, you know, what happens subsequently thereafter. You know, what is the tradition? What do we do, both as Jews, as Christians, that you know, mark that entryway into, you know, a religious life or an observant life or a life of faith?
So let's talk about that. So one of them in the Christian religion, there is the baptism. The baptism, which is this entryway, it's sometimes called an initiation. I hate calling it like an initiation because it sounds like I'm signing up for or like Phi Kappa Psi or something like that.
But they grab the paddles.
Yeah, with the paddles and everything and sliding down a table full of beer. And it's just like, no, this is not, it's not what we're going for. But the baptism, which, you know, from a Christian perspective, so John the Baptist, a intense practicing Jew, takes this idea of I believe what would be the mikvah, and which can happen, and I'll allow you to explain this more, all the multiple times where he says this is a singular moment for you to repent and to really change your life. You're committing yourself to this. You're being washed of your sin, and this is preparing you for the Savior that is coming. And then Jesus later on gets baptized himself, and the Holy Spirit shows up. And so then we, in our way of becoming Christians, step into that baptismal rite as well that Jesus showed us, and that becomes one of the main sacrament that I think almost every single Christian denomination will agree on.
Is it time specific?
No.
So I mean, you can be baptized at 3 days old. You can be baptized at 35 years old. That there's no one specific time and place.
Yeah, certain traditions are gonna go for the infant baptism, and that's a big thing to do. But that's more of a celebration of the community. The community is there to stand and say, we are here for this family. We are here for this child. With the Christian walk, we know is challenging. So we are all here and taking a vow. There's actually during the prayers that happen is that we take this vow to support this child in his or her walk in Christ, his or her walk in dealing with the darkness of the world. Because the baby itself obviously can't make that decision. Mm-hmm. And so, which led to later on a thing called confirmation that would say, now as an adult, you can confirm, you as yourself as an individual, say, yes, this is the way that I want to walk.
So even with confirmation, I mean, is it age specific?
Yes. But if you've never been confirmed, there's also adult confirmation.
Okay.
So if you come into faith later on and you get baptized at 30, and then it would be, you know, highly recommended that you get ready for adult baptism to really, so you yourself can do critical thinking. You yourself can learn about the major points of our beliefs, and most importantly, form and start to begin and form your own personal relationship with God in a community, in a small group that we would do. So that's the baptismal rite, which changed with John the Baptist and Jesus, where it's a one-time thing. And really, it is a universal way of us being, of committing ourselves. There's death imagery of going into the water, of dying to the old self and coming up to new life. And our feeling of the Holy Spirit comes upon you when you come out of those waters, right? So your life has changed, you're going in a new direction, and you're like a baby. You're like a baby at that point, even if you're 30 or 40, mm-hmm. and now you need to be nurtured, and now you need to grow, and now you need to be part of a Christian community that's going to help you to develop and form yourself. Mm-hmm. But so our roots of that, I'm assuming, come from the mikvah, right, which was not a singular moment. It's not just a one-time thing.
No, so the mikvah itself, which it's actually an amazing concept in and of itself, which is that the mikvah itself is a collection of rainwater that is constantly flowing, right? So river, you can make mikvahot, you can make them as long as it is constantly flowing from a natural source, right? So for us, you know, we are very grateful and just amazing that we have God's greatest mikvah 2 miles east, being the Atlantic Ocean.
Yeah.
Right. And for Jews, you know, it is, you know, especially when it comes around the time of conversion, that it's that ritual immersion that one undergoes, almost, you know, a rite of passage, states of liminality in terms of having one's status confirmed of where they, how their lives will change through conversion. But the mikveh itself, I mean, anyone, you know, as Jews, anyone can go under the mikveh to take that sacred moment to wash themselves, to purify themselves. Lots of Jews do it before Shabbat to get to a state of ritual purity where they're able to really take in the essence and the beauty of God and the beauty of our tradition and, you know, embrace Shabbat in some way. Some people do it. I know my wife and I did it before we got married, really to take that sacred moment to, you know, connect with God and to express our attachment not only to one another, but, you know, to the higher source that is out there. So there are opportunities. It's not, you know, like a one-shot kind of deal.
Right. It's not something that you have inside the temple because it's got to have the flowing water. Mm-hmm. And and where in Christianity, sometimes people have pools inside the church, or you could do it in a pool. But St. Mary's.
No, we cannot do it.
No. Yeah, you can't do it in the pool. Yeah. At St. Mary's, we do a thing on Easter morning where we go off the beach, Stewart Beach, and we do full immersion baptisms there. But the infant baptism, you know, goes back to the medieval times where you just had in the rate of infanticide of babies dying within, you know, weeks sometimes, and that's why people wanted to baptize their baby to save them from sin before they passed on.
So if we go back a little bit to that concept of birth, the joy, the excitement, is there something beyond, say, baptism that formally acknowledges and welcomes that, say, baby into the community? You know, for as Jews, especially for boys, for example, we have the rite of circumcision, right? On the eighth day, you know, we call an amoyal, a physician who removes the foreskin and, does that procedure. And of course, that in and of itself comes back and dates back to the times of the Bible, certainly to the times of in Genesis and the Torah, where God speaks to Abraham when Abraham, in his very spry young age, has Isaac. And on the eighth day of Isaac's birth, he circumcises Isaac, his entire household, community, and then himself, so that he would have the strength to circumcise the rest. But that notion that God says, you will circumcise your son on that eighth day as a sign, a visible mark on the male body that shows and defines that sacred covenantal relationship between God and the Jewish people. So we have that notion on the eighth day. Of course, if one is premature, or cannot endure the procedure on the eighth day, we absolutely wait until that child has the strength to endure that procedure. It could be months. It could be however long. We say in Judaism, the notion of pekuach nefesh, to save a life, is the most important thing. So in that kind of context, we would delay a little bit. But that in and of itself would be the formal recognition and bringing into the Jewish community.
Sure.
You know, from a Jewish standpoint, a lot of our festivals, a lot of our life cycle events always happened and originated in the home, right? Circumcision done in the home. The ceremony, baby naming, for example, conferring a Hebrew name upon our children, always occurred in the home. Of course, we shifted towards the synagogue, largely because if I have a very large extended family and with a loving and supportive community, I can't really fit 200 people in my house, but I can fit 200 people in my synagogue very comfortably. So we moved to and it's also a formal recognition in the community that we are welcoming in this child into the Jewish community and the Jewish faith. You know, we confer upon them a Hebrew name, right? Most Jews lay their descendantry to Ashkenazi Jewry, which is to say that those from Eastern European origin. And of that Eastern European origin, the tradition is to name our children after a deceased relative. But the flip side, which is actually kind of interesting, is we also have Sephardic Jewry, which is those that lay descendantry from Spain, North Africa, the Middle East, and their tradition is to name after a living relative. So I know I am very blessed to have three daughters. When our first daughter was born, my wife and I spent a lot of time thinking about to whom she would be named after. And I had an amazing relationship with my bubby, with my grandmother, my mother's mother, and decided to name her middle name, Ray, after my bubby, Rachel.
Mm-hmm.
So in Hebrew, it would be Rachel, would be Hebrew, her Hebrew name, actually her Hebrew name. Eliana is Hebrew as well, so Eliana, Rachel. And we named her there with the notion that she would take on those characteristics, those qualities, those things that we really enjoyed and loved from our loved one and embody it into her so that she takes on that responsibility and that obligation.
So, but you said the eighth day, which is this is where this begins,
yes,
for the males of this initiation. For the females, then, where is that? Because for Christians across the board, baptism is really the initiation. That's the beginning. That's the start of it. Doesn't matter if you're 3 weeks old or if you're 40. And then there's a lot of other things that happen after that that help with the continued formation. But this idea of being welcomed into the family of God, those words come out after the baptism, right? So for what I'm hearing from you is the 8 days. And after the 8 day, then what about the girls?
So because women were not, I don't want this to come across wrongly, women were not highly valued, right? As we know throughout the Torah, tons of men are named. There are many stories. There's many parables. Women are not explicitly named, and those that are named for a reason, right? Like our matriarch, Sarah, Rachel, Rebecca, Leah, you know, they're named for a reason. There was never any, especially biblically, there was never any formal ceremony, so to speak, that would mark the life of a Jewish of a Jewish girl. You know, we've more modernized it in terms of having it make meaningful moments. I know for you know, my wife and myself, we had said we definitely want to do a baby naming to recognize our daughters. We tried as best we could with the eighth day, trying to linking it to what we call Brit Milah, the rite of circumcision and baby naming. But all of our kids had jaundice in the hospital. So they were in the hospital for 6 days or 7 days. Wasn't really going to be able to take my kid out on that eighth day after one day in the real world and expose her to, you know, an entire community. So we actually waited. We waited, I believe, about 2 weeks to be able to formally name our children in the synagogue itself.
Okay. Yeah. And it's funny in the church, and this is probably the Catholic Church, the Episcopal Church, Anglican Church, Lutheran Church, we do have the Feast of the Circumcision. Hmm. And so since Jesus was a Jew, right, again, gets back to these roots here that Jesus was a Jew. And this is so important always to bring this in our preaching and our teaching of these Judaic, of our Judaic roots. But that Jesus, that it's changed the name in the Anglican Church as the Feast of the Holy Name and Circumcision. But that is acknowledged, right? That is acknowledged of his, of Jesus's Jewish life cycle.
Well, what does that mean? I mean, the Feast of Circumcision, I mean, is it a meal that is prepared by the community after the procedure has been done, or is
no? The Feast of the Circumcision is more of a service. It's a worship service. It's okay. A liturgy that happens, and it's a celebration because the liturgy of the church is following the life of Jesus Christ. And so that's what we live through. Our readings, our scripture, our everything, our seasons is moving through the full life. So we start from, of course, Advent and Christmas, and we get all the way to Lent, which is preparing us for the cross, which prepares us then for the resurrection. Mm-hmm. And then from there, from the growth and the development of the church that comes through the power of the resurrection. So it's always through the life of Christ and the bestowing of the Holy Spirit that happens after that. So
it's interesting, though, because as Jews, you know, the one thing that we need to survive, you know, as Jews, there's always food. We need food, right? So it's interesting, that notion of the Feast of Circumcision, because look, you know, from our rite of passage after circumcision, you know, we place wine upon our child's lips to remind them of the sweetness of embracing the Jewish faith. Part of it is also as a mild intoxicant to at 8 days to allow that child to forget the pain or the discomfort that they're feeling. But then, you know, as Jews, what do we do after? Well, we got to sit around our table and eat, because if we don't eat, we're going to wither away.
Right.
So it's just interesting that, you know, it's almost as if, you know, as Jews, we take it to the umpteenth degree, which is to say, oh, wow. The procedure's done. We're amidst family and community and all of our friends, and we've welcomed in this Jewish baby boy. Let's eat. Let's talk. Let's
sure.
Let's eat.
Sure.
Let's eat.
Yeah. So I want to touch upon another one, that the next step, which is for in the church comes up with, once you had all these babies being baptized, they are not conscious at that point to really make that step and to say, yes, I want to be a Christian. And some people will wait and say, I'm not going to baptize my child till they're 18. I want them to make the choice. I want them to, it's like the Amish. You live within the community, and then at 18 years old, you decide, are you in or are you out? Is this the lifestyle you want? If not, you got to go. But at least as an adult, you're making this. You're not being forced into this.
So that's actually an interesting notion, because I know, you know, within Judaism, for example, there's some dissension in terms of circumcision, right? Do we perform it at 8 days old? Does a Jewish boy at 8 days old have the right and the knowledge to be able to say, whoa, not for me? Right? Because a child at 8 days doesn't have that knowledge. So effectively, it's being imposed upon them for that notion of a sacred covenantal relationship. You know, I firmly believe, you know, at 8 days, that child, even though does not make the choice for themselves, but it's an important rite of passage that happens, you know, for our children.
Sure.
But for
when that child grows older, wouldn't you say that in the church we have confirmation? which happens for our children. Sometimes that's tied to also your first communion. Sometimes it depends on the tradition. But then confirmation is this time, which could take a year, could take 6 months, 3 months, depending on the tradition, of really allowing us focused on the actual individual of growing and naming their relationship. And I know we only have a couple minutes here, but the bat mitzvah, isn't that a time also for the child to start to begin on his or her own turf or mindset to say, this is the direction of the life I want to go. I'm proud of my Judaism.
Absolutely. And it goes a little bit beyond that, which is, you know, once our children have been named, we have a thing called consecration, which is usually when our kids are in, like, you know, kindergarten and they start their formal Jewish education. And we mark it, you know, many synagogues around the world, we give them a small little baby Torah. We embrace them in the community, but we bring them in to say, today marks your formal admission into Jewish education. You know, we're talking probably 8-9 years later, they become, as they prepare to become bar bat mitzvah, which is the time that they are called to read Torah, to give their interpretation of the Torah portion, but being able to address the community itself. I do recognize that we got a lot more stuff going on, which we will certainly pick up with next week. Again, we appreciate your comments, your thoughts. Please reach out to Father Anderson or myself, Rabbi Durbin, in our respective communities. Let us know your thoughts, your feelings.
Yeah, our services are always open. So come visit us. And at St. Mary's, we got Saturday nights, we have a 5 p.m. service. Sunday mornings at 7:30, we have a 9 a.m. service. And then we have another 9 a.m. service, which is more of a family rock band service. And then 11 o'clock. And then your service would be on Friday.
Yep, so Friday night, 7 o'clock tonight, just as the first Shabbat of the of the month. And Saturday morning, 9 o'clock. And we do a very extensive and incredible Torah discussion at 10 o'clock, and that goes to around noon.
So our final thought of the day here is focusing, if really seeing the more, usually there's more similarities than not. So meditate on that. God bless you. We will see you next week.